Yesterday, we visited Elie Wiesel's home, and there was a safer open. And then we visited the outdoor museum, and again there was a safer open. In the Shulchan Aruch, it's assumed that if the safer is open to the pages where you have Divrei Torah, that's considered a bizayon to the safer. So you really should close it. In the outdoor museum, the safer was open to the title page. It wasn't open to the Divrei Torah. So that's not a bizayon to the safer. That was decent. The safer that was open in Elie Wiesel's home, a Yoredei, a Chelek Gimel, it's highly unlikely that Balabatim would have, I don't think in Europe, Balabatim would have a Yoredei, a Chelek Gimel in their home. Unless the father, unless Elie Wiesel's father was a rabbi, or he was learning for smicha.
But I'm not. Thank you. Was very frum. His father.
Very frum, but if he wasn't the rabbi, frum is Balabatim, I doubt had a set of Yerideas at home. The other sefer that was open in the rabbi's home was a sefer Erech Shai. Erech Shai is a Shalos HaTshuvos sefer by one of the local rabbonim. So that makes sense. They said that was considered a rabbi's home. Okay, the rabbi would have a Shalos HaTshuvos Erech Shai, but a normal family wouldn't have such a sefer. It's interesting that about 5 years ago, one of the students in my class in Yeshiva gave me a set of Erech Shai and Shura Shai. Shura Shai is Shadus HaTshuvos, written by one of the Rabbanim from Siget. Shai is the Rosh HaTeva Shlomi Yehuda. The family name was Tabak. And the Nochri, who was giving us the tour, told us that I asked him, he said, this Tabak family was known. He was a prominent rabbi in the 1900s. The Erech Shai has several volumes on Arba Chelke Shulchan Aruch comments. Short Biruri Halacha. And the Shura Shai, Chuvas, he has regular style Chuvas. Not like the Satmar Rebbe, not like the Chasam Sof. Regular Chuvas that anyone would write. One of the Chuvas that he has is very, everybody relies on this. The Chochma Sodom has a whopper of a Chumrah. That when a person goes to mikveh, you have to make sure there are no chatzitzes. And even though there's no need to open one's mouth when you go to the mikveh, the inside of the mouth doesn't require tefillah. But if there's a chatzitza inside of the mouth, then it poses a problem. Some rishonim say chatzitza inside the mouth is only midirabbanan. And Taisus doesn't agree. Taisus holds a menatorah. Really, doesn't make any sense. Why should it be a chatzitza menatorah? Chatzitza means if the water has to touch the body, if you have a chatzitza, the water is not touching. But you don't have to open your mouth. Why should there be a problem of chatzitza? So that's what led many to adopt that position of the Ritva, that chatzitza in the mouth is only with the rabbon. So anyway, the Chochma Sodom, whose sefer was accepted in Lithuania, like the Bible, the Chayyadim Chochma Sodom. That was the major, one of the major poskim of Lithuania. Chochma Sodom says that you have a filling and a tooth, that's considered a chatzitza. So married women can never make filling in their teeth, because they can never go to mikveh. That's such a big chumrah. So the Erech Shai, the Shurah Shai, is one of the Gdolim who disagreed. And that's, we all rely on that. There are still people alive today who are machma like the Chochma Sodom. So the married women never fill their teeth. So they lose their teeth at a pretty young age. That's a major problem. Yeah. But most do not follow that opinion. He has another famous tshuva. He was dealing also with Neologin, with rabbis who paskin wrong, where we're not sure if they're Orthodox or the Neologin. So there was one case where there was a rabbi who had a smicha from his own father-in-law. Father-in-law gave him smicha after he married his daughter. Not that he was a Talmud of his. So the Balabatim were ma'arer that what kind of phony smicha is that? Smicha has to be from someone not related. You get smicha from your own father, your own father-in-law, is that acceptable? So he has a famous tshuva. The Sridi Yesh also talks about this, the same issue. And he quotes many poskim who talk about this, that smicha from your own father or your father-in-law is acceptable. There's nothing wrong with it. Yeah, but over here, if he poskim ruang, so then there's a reyesa. So we have to look into it to find out how come he made a mistake in psak. We have to fire him to see maybe he doesn't know how to poskim shaglas. But under normal circumstances, if there's no reyesa, so then we assume that smicha from a close relative is valid. He has another tshuva which is very relevant lahalacha. He quotes the Heshev Moshe, the Yismach Moshe. He didn't have a Mishnah Brura to quote. Everybody knows this from the Mishnah Brura, that on Chol HaMoed half of the people do wear tefillin, half of the people don't wear tefillin. So the Mishnah Brura quotes lahalacha that they're not permitted to daven together in the same minyan. That it's an issue of loisus goydidu. People dress differently. So that's some people dress casually and some people dress formally. So that's not an issue of loisus goydidu. If some people wear a tie, some people don't wear a tie. Loisus goydidu, the simple pshat and chumash means that if a relative dies, you're not allowed to scrape your body to cause bleeding over the fact that this person died. The world doesn't come to an end. We believe that the neshama lives on. Loisus goydidu, that we shouldn't mutilate our bodies. Because the person, the individual, had died, the body is dead, but the neshama is still alive. Okay, the neshama is still alive. That's the simple pshat. And then the Gemara has an additional level of interpretation on the pasuk loisus goydidu, that loisasu agudas agudas does mean that you're not allowed to join the aguda. What it means is that you're not allowed to demonstrate that there's a machloikas. The Shama and Bisil had a lot of machloikas, but they davened and they learned in different Bate Midrashim. When they wanted to have a vote, then they sat together and they debated together and then they voted. And the opinion that was outvoted, okay. But if you keep, let's say, one shul le daven losel svart, one shul le daven losel hashkan, it's a different shul, so there's no issue of losel svart. But to have, so if you have a different minion for the people that do wear tefillin chol hamoed, separate minion for the people that don't wear tefillin chol hamoed, that's not loisus goydidu. Two bunch midrash and bi'erachas, we accept the opinion. It's a machlokes abaye v'rava and yavamas, we accept the view that that's not a violation of loisus goydidu. But having the same shul, half the people do wear tefillin, half the people don't wear tefillin, that's an issue of loisus goydidu. So we're familiar with that. The Mishnah Brura passes like that. There are many who disagree with the whole thing. They think that's not loisus goydidu. But that's what the Mishnah Brura says. So in Hungary, where they didn't have a Mishnah Brura yet in the early 1900s, so they quoted this same idea from the Heshev Moshe, from the Yismach Moshe's Chuvas. He says that it's an issur of loisus goydidu. So this Chuvas Shai has a Shaila. We don't have enough people in the Shul on Chol HaMoed to have two different minyanim. So if you're going to say they can't daven together, there simply won't be a minyan. So maybe there's room to be mekel. So he's mekel. He says that just because, he says the belt says, this al pi halacha is not correct, but the belt says, what should the din be? Should you wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed? Should you not wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed? So on Shabbos Yandav, you don't wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed. That's a Shaila. How serious is the Kedushas Chol HaMoed? Does it pater you from tefillin or not? So the belt says, not halachically correct, it depends if you plan to go to work or not. If you're going to go to work, then it's not like Shabbos HaYantav, then you should wear tefillin. If you don't plan to go to work, then it is like Shabbos HaYantav when you don't go to work, so then you don't wear tefillin. So that's what the Chura Shai, that's what this Pesach writes, that just because half the people wear tefillin and half the people are not wearing tefillin doesn't really indicate that there's a machlokes what you're supposed to wear tefillin. It means half the people plan to go to work on Chol HaMoed, half the people don't. That's not a machlokes. Everyone agrees you're not allowed to go to work on Chol HaMoed unless you have a drugstore, a tzorchei rabim. Look, people need a doctor has to take care of the sick patients. You can't tell them, wait till after Chol HaMoed and I'll take care of you. Some people, or if you're afraid you're going to close your store on Chol HaMoed, the customers won't come back after Chol HaMoed. They'll pick a different store. They won't come back. So that's a dover haday. So the fact that some people are going to work, some people are not, that's not a loisus goydidu. Everybody agrees what the din is. There's no machlokes. The din is you're not allowed to go to work, with a few exceptions that you are allowed to go to work. So So the fact that half the people are wearing tefillin and half the people not, that's what the Shura Shai writes. Doesn't indicate agudas agudas. It just means that some of them are going to work, some of them not, the way people assume. This morning, we were learning in the Daf Yomi a very interesting din, that there's such a concept as tahara blua. If a woman is pregnant with a baby, the baby is balua inside her womb, balua in the womb, or if someone swallows a ring, it's going to have to come out. Someone swallows a ring, so the ring is balua in the stomach. So if the person who swallowed the ring, or the pregnant woman, attends a funeral, so true, the pregnant woman becomes tamei, and the individual who swallowed the ring becomes tamei, but the fetus and the ring do not become tamei. That's called tahara blua, whether balua in the womb or balua in the stomach. It's balua all the way in the body. Balua is not mekabel tumah. So in Yerideya, in the end of Yerideya, they have all the laws of doctors. That section of Yerideya is all patterned after the Ramban Sefer Torah Sa'odam. The Ramban was a doctor, and he wrote a sefer called Torah Sa'odam. All the dinim that you have to know from the time that the baby is born till the day of death and after. He has the dinim about delivering babies on Shabbos, what are you allowed to do, what you're not allowed to do, and treating patients when they get sick, when you're allowed to treat, when you're not allowed to treat. Sometimes you can hasten the death of a person. How risky a procedure are you permitted to get involved in? Medicine years ago and even today is a risky thing. You may harm the patient, you may kill a patient. So the Ramban has all these dinim, and then he has what happens if the doctor was not successful, the patient dies. He talks about ripping kriya, he talks about avelus. Once he talks about avelus, he talks about Tisha B'Av, he talks about the other tanaisim that are based on avelus of the Churban Beis Hamikdash. And because he's talking about people dying, so he talks about Tumas Kohanim as well. So the last 50 simanim in Yerideya are all from the Torah Sa'odim. Every section in Shulchan Aruch is based on some other Rishon. Much of Shulchan Aruch is straight from the Rambam word for word. Much of Choshen Mishpat is based on the Sefer HaTrumos by a Talmud of the Ramban. Much of Hilchus Torahs and Hilchus Mashkainis and Hilchus Hanor, much of that is Sefer HaTrumos. Different sections of Shulchan Aruch are patterned after different Rishon. So there, the Shach has a comment at the end of Yerideya, Nilchus Tumas Kohanim. He quotes from the Rekeach. The Rekeach was from the later Balei HaTosfos. He often has some of the Rekeach wrote more than one sefer. So some of his svarim are all full of Kabbalah. And the basic Rekeach is like a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. He has halachas, usually regular halachas, like a Kitzur that everybody's familiar with. And every so often he has something that doesn't appear in the Kitzur, in a regular sefer. So he has a din. If a woman is married to a Kohen and she's pregnant with a baby, she doesn't know if it's going to be a boy or a girl. If it turns out, if a boy is born, so the boy has a dinim of a male Kohen, he's not permitted to attend the funeral. If it's a girl, so a bas Kohen is permitted to attend the funeral. So if the mother is pregnant with a baby, she doesn't know if it's a boy or a girl, so the discussion is, the issue is she permitted to attend the funeral? Is she permitted to go to the cemetery? Many women have a minhag that when they're pregnant, they don't go to the cemetery at all. So one of the Gedolim in Europe wrote 100 years ago that this was a major mistake. There is no such minhag. They must have overheard the Rabbanim discussing this topic. If a woman is married to a Kohen and she's expecting a baby and it may turn out to be a boy, is it permissible for her to go to a funeral considering the 50-50 possibility she may be causing a male Kohen to become tummy? So this is a discussion. The Shach quotes on the Rekeach. So the Rekeach says, well, to begin with, it's 50-50 whether it turns out to be, if it's a boy or a girl, approximately 50-50. Then they have no way of knowing what it's going to be. And there's a slight possibility, there's a near chance that the child may turn out to be an Nephel, that he won't be born alive, he's still born. right is lahakel. That's what he calls svexveke. Doesn't really mean svexveke, it means the right is lahakel. 50-50 whether it's male or female, and there's a miut that may turn out to be a nefel, so therefore you go lahakel. So the Magen Avraham and Hilchos Shabbos quotes this shach in the name of the Rakeach, and he's bothered with the murderous kasha. Even if he knows bevadai that it's a boy, but the Mishnah says that Tara Gulua is not Makabal Tumah. If a pregnant woman goes into attends a funeral, whether she has a fetus in the womb or someone swallowed a ring in the stomach, so that's Balua. So whatever is Balua is not Makabal Tumah. So what's the problem? Even if you do know that it's a boy. He said the other day, the Rebbe Rabbi Elimelech told his niece that she's going to have a baby. She was pregnant, so he told her she's going to have a boy. She should name the boy after him, Elimelech, and she named the baby Hirshmelech, Fishmelech Dinavir. So even if you know Bavarai that it's going to be a boy, it should also be Mutter, because Tara Bulua is not Makabal Tumah. So this is the Magen Avraham's Kasha against this Reket, but it doesn't make sense. It's in the Yeshivas, it's Yadua. They say over the same shot was offered by two prominent rabbanim. Rabbi Chaim Oizer was the rabbi in Vilna, and Rabbi Chanan Wasserman had his own yeshiva. They happened to be brothers-in-law. They married two sisters. They married two daughters of the rabbi in Shavel. Shavel Arab's daughters. So here they both thought along the same lines. Apparently, the Rekeach is of the opinion that the prohibition of a kohen to attend a funeral is not necessarily because he's going to become tummy. A kohen should not come in contact with a mace, even if he has a stunt, even if he has some kind of a trick, whereby he doesn't become tummy. He's not allowed to be in contact with a mace. So even though, true, even though the Mishnah says that Tara Belua is not Mekabel Tumah, but still, there should be an Issa Tumas Kohanim. So that's why the Rekeach had to come up with this kula. That you have what he calls a svexveke, it really means that it's a roiv. It's approximately 50-50, if it's going to be a boy or a girl. Even if it'll be a boy, it could well be that it'll be a nefel, that he won't live so long to be born alive. So even now, when his heart is still functioning, even before the baby died, it doesn't have the status of a kohen, a live kohen, that there should be an isra of tumah. This is really a question. If this is the pshat in the Rekeach, that you're reinterpreting the prohibition of Tumas Kohanim, it doesn't mean, as the simple reading in the Chumash says, Parashas Samor, the nefesh lo yitama, the yama, shouldn't become tama. It has nothing to do with tuma. Just a coin shouldn't be in contact with a mace. So what if it'll be the reverse? Maybe it's possible. There are cases where a person does become tummy, even though it's not really in contact with the mace. He's very far away from the mace, but he still becomes tummy. Let's say a coin flies in an airplane on top of the cemetery. Let's say you travel over Europe, a few thousand miles over Europe. You travel to Eretz Yisrael. So if you're traveling over Europe, a thousand miles, it's impossible that you don't cross over a cemetery. There has to be a cemetery down below. And the Tumas Ameis goes up. Tumas Oilad L'Rakia. So there's a Tosus in Erevin. The Tosus says, the term Rakia means up until the clouds. Above the clouds is already Bar Rakia. So if the airplane is above the clouds, so there's room to say the Tumas doesn't go so far up. Let's say, wherever you go, there are probably Mesim buried around the other side of the globe. There's a Din Tumas Mes, Yoredes Ad HaTahom. The Tumah goes all the way up and the Tumah goes all the way down. So let's say, I don't know, what's the opposite of Hungary? The opposite of America is China? I don't know. So what's on the opposite side of the globe? So if there's a seven. Okay. The other side of the world. 12 hours away. Well, what's 12 hours away? Okay. So if you say a coin can't go anywhere here because it's a cemetery 12 hours away on the other side of the globe. So the Reb Shlomo Zalman writes, the answer is Tumas Ameis is Yoredes Ad HaTahom, up until, but not past the Tahom. The Tahom probably means the center of the globe. It doesn't go all the way to the other side of the globe. So Tumas Ameis Zoila ad l'rakia. That's the expression the Mishnais have. One can say ad l'rakia, but not barakia. Okay, so if the plane is above the clouds, and then there's room to be made. Fine. But let's say when you take off in Kennedy Airport,
or landing
or taking off, once the eastern side is the ocean, and north, west, and south is all Jewish cemeteries. All Jewish cemeteries. So for sure the Tumas Mace is Matami Bo'el. If you have Mesim Nochrim, so that's a machlekes, whether Mesakum is Matami Bo'el or not. But they have Jewish cemeteries on three sides of Kennedy Airport. So whenever the planes take off or land, they're below the clouds. You have a shayla of Tumas Mace. So the Gedolim in Europe wrote about this. The Kosher Glover, Goyen, was the Rav in Kosher Glover before the First World War. And I think Kosher Glover was destroyed then. And then he was invited by Rav Meir Shapiro, founded the Lublina Yeshiva. He invited the Rabarye Tzvi Frimer. He invited him to give the highest shir in the Yeshiva. The Kosher Glover Goyen has a sefer where he tries to defend that it was the common practice. Kohanim did go in airplanes. And the double yodua, the airplane, if it goes 100 miles, it goes 1,000 miles, for sure it's going to go over a cemetery. How is it possible to avoid going over a cemetery? It's impossible. So he has seven different studies. He has seven different suggestions. All of them are very questionable. Why should be mutter for trying to go in an airplane? So others suggest maybe the whole prohibition is like Rav Chaim Oiz and Rav Ohana Vassman, and maybe the whole prohibition of the Kohanim is not so much not to become Tomei. That really doesn't bother us, neither here nor there. The prohibition is the Kohen shouldn't come in contact with a mace. So even though the Kohen is a fetus, there's still a problem, even though the fetus is Tara Blua, not Mekabel Tumah, but still he's coming in contact with the mace. And in this case, the Kohen is so far away from the mace. True, the Tumas Mace is Zoyla Adrakia. Tami Ba'ohel, but it's so far away, it could be that there's no prohibition over here. So that's a topic which is discussed by the recent Svarim. After the Kosher Glover wrote his Tshuva, others have wrote about this topic as well. Sofik Tumah B'Shus HaRabim, right, is Tohor. As far as Tumah Vatara is concerned, the question is, what about for the Issa Tumas Kohanim? So the Tosis in Bava Kamma, there's a famous Tosis in Bava Kamma, on Daf Yud Aleph, where Tosis says that for Sofik Tumah we have different rules, but the Bishus HaYachad, Bishus HaRabim. But for Issa the Heter, for the same thing, when it's Negev to Issa the Heter, then it's governed with the rules of Issa v'Hetva. So let's say, whether a Kohen is allowed to be Metamei, so true, Sofik Tumah B'Shus HaRabim, the fella will be Tohar, at the end of the day, the Kohen will be Tohar. Maybe I should say Sofik D'Oraisa L'Chumra, the Kohen is not allowed to go. So the Minchas Chinuch raises that possibility. He himself quotes, there's a Tosfos in the end of the second parak in Ksubas, Tosfos says not so. Tosfos says the same cloud that passed in Zois, but the Tumah will paskenize for the Tumas Kohanim. Assuming that Tumas Kohanim is a function of whether he becomes Tumah or not. But the way Rab Chaim Oiz and Rab Ohanan said Pshat in this Rekeach, it could be that it's a totally different issue. That's how the Menchaskun raised the possibility. Maybe Safik Tumah B'Shus HaYochid, even a Svek Svek is L'Chumra. Safik Tumah B'Shus Rabim, even one Safik is L'Kula. Maybe when they get to Kohanim, it's not so. One Sofik would be L'Chumra, and Sfek Sfek would always be L'Kula. That's a major topic of Halacha.
Shurishai, Rav Yitzchak, 1900.
People tell me they don't think this is correct. You travel around all over, you see Amorim Kodesh in every shul, and almost always it has the Aseres HaDibrois, either on the Peroches or on top of the Aron Kodesh or somewhere. So he claims that this was instituted by the Neologan. He says that this is against the Halacha, as the Gemara says in Brachas, that in the Beis HaMikdash, every day is part of the davening, they used to recite the Aseres HaDibros. And then after the Churban Beis HaMikdash, they discontinued it. Bepnei Tarumas Aminim. That Bikurisim will think that only the Aseres HaDibros are min Hashamayim, and everything else was invented by Moshe Rabbeinu. Not permitted to give any more chashivas of Aseres HaDibros than anything else. That's why the Rambam writes that it's not right that people stand up, they sit for the whole Kriyas HaDibros, they stand up and read Aseres HaDibros, not right. That's why people stand up from the beginning of the whole Aliyah, not just when they do the Aseres HaDibros. So he said, this Rav, this Churashai, he writes, the fact that they put Aseres HaDibros on the Parochas, on the Yom Kodesh, this was started by the Neo Bogan. So I remember once I showed this to a big Tamachachim, and he said that he thinks that it's utterly ridiculous. He thinks the Aron Kodesh in the Beis HaMikdash, I think our service are different in it. So we have an Aron Kodesh, the Zecher, the Aron Kodesh that they had in the Beis HaMikdash. The Aron Kodesh and Beis HaMikdash had our service are different. That's why we put it. He thinks it preceded the Neologan. He thinks it. Okay, the question is whether the shape, it's out of shape, it's a little out of shape, like the royal crown. Okay. we should try to do some research on that. Is this suggestion correct, that putting the Aseres HaDibros on the Aron Kodesh or on the Parochas was started by the Neil Brogan and we're not allowed to do it?
And the Magen David was also started by the Selog or by the Zionists?
One of the big Talmid HaChamim who lived here in Hungary was a great grandson of the Chasam Sofer. He writes he was the first descendant to be named after the Chasam Sofer. His name is Rav Moshe Glasner. He wrote the Sefer Dor Revi. He's the fourth generation after the Chasam Sofer. I think we were discussing previously about him, that the Satmar Rebbe held that he was an Apikeris. Why was he an Apikeris? Because he was a big Zionist. He was the Rav in Klosenberg. He wasn't the Rebbe. He was the Rav in Klosenberg. And he left in 1923 to move to Eretz Yisrael, way before the Medina, because he felt that there's a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. So the Satmar Rebbe considered him an Apikeris because of that. He's not allowed to move to Eretz Yisrael or anything.
So he
has different svarim. They're all called Dorothy. He has tshuvas, very nice tshuvas. And he has a sefer that has become a classic that was reprinted by the family, a sefer on Chulin that's called Dorothy. The introduction to the sefer on Chulin is really an introduction to all of Torah Shebal Peh. He talks about the development of the Torah Shebal Peh over the generations. Things were added. So he raises, the way he presents things, he has a very modern approach to a lot of things. So not everybody agrees with his modern approach. So he raises an issue. Gemara seems to say that certain worms you're permitted to eat in fish because the worms developed in the fish. So the question is, well, we don't believe in spontaneous generation. Worms can't develop in fish. Fish give birth to fish. Worms give birth to worms. What do you mean? The fish turns into worms in the Torah Zazah. So Shlomo Zalman Auerbach wrote, it's a double pashut, that what the Gemara meant to say was, if the worms were not visible to the naked eye, until after the fish was caught, you didn't see worms. There were microscopic eggs there. And then the microscopic eggs develop and they turn into worms. So that's what the Gemara meant, that the fish turns into worms. That is mutter. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said that must be the pshat of the Gemara. So this author of the Dor Revi, he assumes that the Chazal made a mistake. They thought that there is such a thing as spontaneous generation. So the shaila is whether the din remains correct. Do we accept the din or not? Maybe we should reject the din. So that's what the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says. You're not allowed to eat worms except for the worms in the herring. All herring has worms in it. Not shy. All herring has worms in it. So the Gemara says that the worms and the fish are muta because they developed after the fish was caught already. Yeah. So the Dor Revi in his Hakdama writes, there seems to be a contradiction between two sources. The Ramban has this question. Rashi in his commentary on Chumash quotes from the Tanoim, "Losasam in kol adovish yagid lecha yom in ismol, a Even if the rabbi made a mistake, the psak is binding, even if it's an error. Herman Hook wrote a book that's called The Cain Mutiny. The theme of the book is based on that Rashi on Chumash. But Athari is binding even when it's an error. There was a mutiny on the ship, and the captain of the ship was wrong. But that's they should have listened to him, because Athari is binding even when it's an error. That's what he said based on the Rashi. So Herman Wolf taught at Yeshiva College for 2 years. So one of the students broke his heart, and they told him that that's not pshat in Rashi, that there is no such halacha. The first Mishnah in Horiyah says that Bez Nagodl gives a psak, and somebody knows that they made a mistake, you're not allowed to listen to the psak. No such halacha that a psak is binding even when it's an error. So how do you read this passage? I feel like Minshu is small. So the different, the Ramban is the first one to ask the kasha. Ramban in his commentary on the Sefer Mitzvahs, so he thinks that the correct meaning is afila near MBA necho, ayiminshu is small. A lot of times, a chemist will tell me if I mix two chemicals, what's going to be the result. And I say, how can it be? This is a calm chemical, this is a kind. You mix them together, you're going to make an explosion. How can it be? But both of them are calm chemicals. Or neither chemical has any color. They get mix them together, it turns red or it turns green. How can it turn green? They're both colorless, or they're both white, or whatever. So one who knows chemistry understands. A layman that doesn't understand, they will have kashas. A doctor will give a psak about a sick patient. So the patient will ask a kasha, how can it be? It's a chakal v'chaymer. The other patient has this sickness, and the way to heal is like this. What do you tell me the way to heal my sickness like this? It should be a chakal v'chaymer. The answer is, chakal v'chaymer doesn't work in medicine. The expert knows what he's saying. The expert knows what he's talking about. So that's what the Ramban reads in this sifre. Afila nirei b'einecho ayinin shuzmal. Even if the eyes of the layman, the psak of the rabbi, absolutely doesn't make any sense whatsoever, the layman should assume that the rabbi didn't make a mistake, but not that the psak is binding even when it is an error. So the pashtus is that the psak is not binding when it's an error. So this, in the Hakdamah to the Doravi, he wants to assume that the psak is binding even when it's an error, because otherwise he should stop eating the herring. And you have other dinim in the Gemara that are based on scientific misinformation that was given to the Chachamim in the days of the Tanaim, in the days of the Amoraim. So he makes the following distinction. I personally don't care for it at all. He makes it the following distinction. Some people do like it. He says, if in the days of the Chachamim that was accepted as scientific fact, and even though now we have discovered that it's incorrect, then we say, Afila yimin shusma. But if when the Chachamim formulated the psak, it was yadua to others in their generation that this is just not true. At the time they gave the psak, it was an error. Such a psak, you're not allowed to follow. But at the time they gave the psak, it was assumed to be correct, based on scientific, accurate information. Even if later on we discover that it's not correct, such a psak is bad. I personally don't care for that chilek. So that's, he's famous for that line in the Hakdamah. That he's famous for another line that many are not happy about, highly questionable. Gemara has a klal that if a person's life is in danger and he has to eat some treif of food, he has to violate an avera to save his life, so you should try to minimize the avera. You should choose, if he's facing a dilemma, you should choose the lesser of the two evils, or the least of all the three evils, whatever the alternatives happen to be. The Gemara gave Tavek a whole discussion. You have to save your life by eating food, otherwise you'll starve to death. So you have a choice of either eating tevel, which has a punishment on Misa B'dei Shemayim, or eating chelet, which has a punishment of kores. So kores is considered worse than Misa B'dei Shemayim. And we would say, eat the tevel, don't eat the chelet. If you have a choice of eating chelet, which has kores, or eating chazer, chazer is only a lav, chelev is kares, so eat the chazer, don't eat the chelev. And so on and so forth. Gemara has a hierarchy of Isurim. Gemara goes into all discussion. You can tell by the punishment which averes are more chomer than which other averes. So this Rav Moshe Glasner is a very modern thinker. The way he writes, he comments on the Homesech Techulin. He has a very open mind, and he says, he a lot of times things that were Taisus said about the Chassam Sofer when he was a little boy, that must not encourage him he should leave his parents' home. Because the first step in learning is you have to ask good kashas. If something does make sense, you have to ask. Then you have to break your head and try to figure out how it does make sense. So he a lot of times he asks kashas, and he likes other Rishonim. He chooses to learn the Gemara not like Tosfos. A lot of times he has logical kashas that leads him to give a different shot to the Gemara. So he writes the following. If you have a choice of eating chazer, you're on a desert island, there's nevela or chazer, or there's a dead body, a human body. So there are people who eat human flesh. But that's so mekubal, that is so universally assumed to be improper, cannibalism. So that's a shaila. Al pi halacha, what's the level of prohibition of eating human flesh? That's a machlokes. The Ramban holds that a mace is also bahanor if it's a mace Yisrael. It's a mace nachri, strictly speaking, the Gemara would appear it's really mutah bahanor. We're machmen not to get anor, but students in medical school always deal with a cadaver of a nachri. We assume the Ikra din may say akam are really mutah bahanor. The Mokar and Chumash is only for mace Yisrael, not for mace Yakam. The Rambam is of the opinion that the Sar Odom has an Isar Aseh. There's no Isar Lav, there's an Isar Aseh. But in the world, it's Mekubal that you don't do that. Eat the Sar Odom is considered really awful, horrible, despicable. So if the person has a choice, he has to save his life. He's not going to eat, he's going to die from malnutrition. So should he eat the Vela, which is a Lav in the Torah? Should he eat the Sar Odom, which is an Isar Kal, according to the Rambam? According to Rambam, no Isar at all. It's either an Isar Esay or it's Mutal Lagamre. So the Doravi and that Hakadama, he thinks that since it's Kubal in the world, that that's absolutely awful, that's considered more Chomer than the Nevela. So that line in his introduction is also heatedly debated. But otherwise, the Hakadama that he gives is very pleasant. He writes about the development of Dorosh Balpeh over the generations, and he quotes a passage from Masecha Sofrim. Why was there a need for Torah Shabbat Peh Bechla? What would be so terrible if everything would be Torah Shabbat Zav? So he says, because in every generation, he's interpreting the Masecha Sofrim. In every generation, people have a different perspective on the whole world. So if everything would be etched in stone, everything would be Torah Shabbat Zav, there wouldn't be any room to negotiate in a later generation to issue a psak different from the psak that was Mekubal 500 years ago. And the Rebbeinu Shalom wants that the Talmid HaChachamim in every generation should be able to paskin according to the way they understand. Lo b'shamayim, the Torah was given to the Talmid HaChachamim to paskin according to the way they understand. In every generation, people's minds work differently. So that's why there was a need for a Torah Shabbat. So this concept he develops at length. Anyway, he was a prominent Talmid Chacham, even though the Sadmar Rebbe thought it was an apikoros. I think he felt it was an apikoros because of his Zionist feelings. But what he writes is not such apikoros. You don't have to agree with everything that he writes. But he's famous for his Hakdama on Kulin and the Sefer on Kulin.
Several people wanted to know about the significance.
Some wanted to know about the significance of davening in a shul which was a neolog shul, which is now a neolog shul. So the din first begins with respect to a base of Avodah Zarah. If you have a base of Avodah Zarah, it says in Shulchan Aruch, you're not permitted to enter. And there are two different reasons why. One, when you tour in Europe, if you don't visit the Bati Avodah Zarah, so you're missing 150% of the tour. Everything revolves about Bati Avodah Zarah. So one reason why it's prohibited is because the Pasuk says, Al Tifnu El Ho Elilim, and the Gemara understands you're not allowed to display any interest in anything that has to do with Avodah Zarah. You're not supposed to discuss anything about Avodah Zarah. Because Baruch Hu is described by the Chumash as a jealous God, Kel Kano Hashem. Sometimes you have a couple and the husband is a very jealous husband. He doesn't want his wife to talk to any other men. So sometimes you have a jealous wife. She doesn't want her husband to talk to any other women. So the Rebbeinu Shel Olam describes himself in the Chumash that he dictated to Moshe Rabbeinu, Kikel Kana Hashem. He's very jealous. And Al-Tif Ne'al Ha'alilim doesn't want us to display any interest, to study anything about Avodah Zarah. Sometimes the Rabbanim have to. Look, sometimes the Rabbanim have to meet with Galochim. So they have no choice. So they have to read the Sifri Avodah Zarah, and they have to research a little bit what the Avodah Zarah thinks. But if it's not Lahavin of the Horus, it's not necessary. The Sanhedrin had to understand Avodah Zarah in order to know when someone is Chai Misa for worshipping Avodah Zarah, when not. But if you're not part of that Sanhedrin, or you're not part of the Rabbanim, has to meet with Galochim, then we have the din of Tifnu El Ha'elilim. In addition to that din, not to display any interest in anything that has to do with Avodah Zarah, there's another issue of Marisayim. If a person enters into a base of Avodah Zarah, so there's a Marisayim, people may think that he's going to daven over there. If he enters the base of Avodah Zarah during prayer time, then the Marisayim is even more serious. If he's entering the base of Avodah Zarah not during prayer time, that's a little less serious. On the Shulchan Aruch it says that not only is actual Avodah Zarah Yehari Vayavar, even a Marisayim Avizrayu is a machlekes, but Marisayim of Avodah Zarah is also Yehari Vayavar. Let's say the Nachri holds a gun to my head. He says, I should worship Avodah Zarah, otherwise he's going to kill me. So if I'm not mekabel be'eloha, I don't believe in it in my heart. So strictly speaking, I'm not really worshipping Avodah Zarah. It's just that the Nachri thinks that he succeeded in getting me to worship Avodah Zarah. So that's a marisayin of Avodah Zarah. So that's Yorg Vayavar, a marisayin. So then Tosis has one opinion. He can go one step further, not to get any hanor from anything that has to do with Avodah Zarah. Even though there's no marisayin, let's say I'm running away from the Nazis and the only rowboat that there is to save my life is a boat that's made from Atzei Asherah. You're not allowed to get hanor from Eitzim that belong to Avodah Zarah. But that's not a marisayin of Avodah Zarah. That's a different issue. So that's Abizrayu of Avodah Zarah. That's a shaila how we pass. That's a contradiction in Shulchan Aruch between two simonim. But you say Yehari Gmal Yavar even of Abizrayu. But on marisayin of Avodah Zarah you do say. So it says in the Shulchan Aruch that to go into a base of Avodah Zarah during prayer time is Yehari Gmal Yavar even to save your life. To go in not during prayer time, that says is you shouldn't go in because of a marisayin of Avodah Zarah, but that's not Yehari Gmal Yavar, because that's not so serious. During the war years, there were people who saved their lives by going in during prayer time and mumbling the prayers mamish. But so that, according to what it says in the Shulchan Aruch, that's supposed to be Yehari Gmal Yavar. You can't fault anybody for anything that they did. Look, it's Einis Rachmana Patre. Yes, they did it to save their lives. The Rambam says one who's supposed to give up his life al kiddush Hashem, not to worship Avodah Zarah, didn't do so. He didn't do right. He did wrong. He didn't fulfill the mitzvah. After Hashem alkecha chol nafshecha afilu neiteles nafshecha. But he's not to be punished. He's not chayv koris and he's not chayv misa because it's einus. Einus mi pachad misa. Einus rachmana patre. Other Rishonim disagree with the Rambam. In the 1500s, they conferred smicha. Smicha is usually transmitted from one who has smicha to the next generation. Ish mipi ish at Moshe Rabbeinu. There's a chain of smicha. And at Tzfat, by the time the Jews arrived in Tzfat in the 1500s, there was nobody who had smicha. Smicha had already ended by the year 500. There were no more musmachim. But nonetheless, they did chiddush ha-smicha. They gathered together all the rabbanim in Tzfat, and they followed the Rambam, who writes an original chiddush, royally. He writes in three different places that he thinks if all the rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael gathered together, they confer smicha on someone, he thinks that that would be a valid smicha. Why do they want to confer smicha? So the reason why they had this wild idea, they gave Rabbi Yosef Karas smicha, and then they did the Al-Sheikh. There were five or six people got smicha, but nothing came out of it. So the whole plan was, this was right after the Gerush Svarad, when many Achenim Bnei Yisrael worshipped Avodah Zarah in order to save their lives. So they were under the impression, like the other Rishonim, that they're Chayiv Koris. that since Pikuach Nefesh doesn't permit one to violate Avodah Zarah, they brought their Chayv Karis. And the Gemara says in the last Perek in Makkos, Kol Chayv Krisa Shaloku, if a person violated an Issa Karis and they gave him Malkus, Niftur Midei Krisus, that wipes off the Karis. So they were interested, nobody had given those who worshipped Avodah Zarah in Spain and Portugal, nobody had given them Hasra, there was no aid in the Hasra. They wanted to put together a dozen of three smuchim and to give malchus to those who would come and volunteer on their own and say they worshipped Avodah Zarah for the sake of the Pikuach Nefesh. They were going to give them malchus in order to patter them from the chorus. And the whole idea was so wild. What do you mean? Chavi Krisu Shaloku means if a person ate chelev and there were aid in the hasra, and if Desni gives him malchus, and then he's patter from the chorus. It's not a person should come on his own and say, I worship Avodah Zarah, give me Malkus. The whole thing was wild. The Gemara says, there is no Malkus for Avodah Zarah. That's what we call a lav shinitan, lazharas misus bezn. If you have an Avera, the Averas are divided into two categories, kalos and chamuras. So kalos, where there's no misus bezn, no koris. And chamuras are the Averas, where there's misus bezn. Or there is Kores. So the Gemara says, Malkus is only given to one who violates an Aver, which is similar to Lo Sachs and Meshor Bedisha. Those are two psukim, one next to the other, in Chumash Dvarim. And Chumash Dvarim is the exception to the rule, Bidarshin Smuchim. Usually, if you have two dinim in the same pasuk, there should be a connection. That's called a Hekesh. If you have two psukim next to each other, that's Smuchim. So we only Darshin Smuchim in Chumash Dvarim. There are many, 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 many famous drushes that are based on Smuchim and Chumash Dvarim. This is one of the very famous ones, that you only give Malkus to such a person who's a Baal Avera, Ayon Bin HaKos HaRosha, if he violated an Avera that's similar to Losasim Shabbatisha. So the Gemara says, Losasim Shabbatisha is an Issa Kal. There's no Kores and there's no Mises Bez. But if someone worships Avodah Zarah, even if the Adam warned him, don't do Avodah Zarah, we've got to give you Malkus, the Bezdin wouldn't give Malkus. There is no Malkus for Isurim Chamor, only for Isurim Chamor. The whole story is so wild, but that was the whole background. In Tzfat in the 1500s, during the lifetime of Rabbi Yosef Kara, they convened all of their Rabbanim in Tzfat in order to give Malkus to those who had worshipped Avodah Zarah. But they worshipped Avodah Zarah to save their lives. So according to the Rambam, the whole thing wasn't necessary. He said, Enes Rachman of Patra, if a person does Avodah Zarah for the sake of Pikuach Nefesh, true, the din is we have to Hashem Lakach b'chol nafshecha, filin notalist nafshecha, you shouldn't have worshipped Avodah Zarah, but there won't be any Oynish Kares, there won't be any Oynish pieces then. But that's what they did. They gathered together in order to give the Malkus to these people. So again, we can't condemn anybody, but we know for a fact that many people, many Achayim Reisal, saved their lives by going to the base of Avodah Zarah during the Nazi period and davening over there. That says in Shulchan Aruch, that's Machaber Beferish, that they entered the base of Avodah Zarah b'shas tefillah, when they're praying, that's your Yehorek Val Yavar, to save your life. If it's Shalot b'shas tefillah, then it says that it's Mutar. So that's as far as entering into a base of Avodah Zarah. The Neologan are not exactly Avodah Zarah. There's a slight difference between them. They're reformed. You're not fulfilling the mitzvah the way it's supposed to be. So the motivation of the Neologan, we heard the whole time, was they wanted to imitate the way they worshipped Avodah Zarah in the churches. So we have a pasuk in Chumash, when we will enter Eretz Yisrael and we will ask, Eich yavda ha'goy mahem salaheihem, how did they worship their Avodah Zarah's v'es and ken gamani? And the Torah says, l'sasim ken l'ashem akech. We shouldn't do that. So the Gemara understands the pasuk to be referring to one who worships Avodah Zarah kidarka, whatever this style of Avodah Zarah is. If they worship Avodah Zarah by tipping their hat, or by throwing stones to the Markulas, or by doing any mishukas, whatever, or by breaking a cane in front of the Avodah Zarah, whatever their ritual is, if you do it, l'shem Avodah Zarah, that's called Avodah Zarah kidarka. That's how the Gemara interprets the pasuk. So the Ramban HaChumash writes that interpretation, the Gemara gives, that's an additional level of interpretation. But he thinks that Pshuta Shomikra doesn't refer to that. And he says, not only are the additional levels of interpretation of the Torah Shebal Peh binding. Not only are the drushes and the Gemara binding, the pshutos and mikra is also binding. That's what Ramban points out. The Gemara never said ein by mikra ela pshuto. The Gemara says ein a mikra yotze mide pshuto. Pshuto is also binding. The drushes are certainly binding. That's the whole context of the Gemara in the middle of Masechus Shabbos. The Gemara says one thing. Rav Chisda says he learned by his Rebbe 15 years. And he always thought that the drushes of the Torah Shabbat are binding, and the Pshut Rishon Mikra you can ignore. Until one fine day, the Rebbe says, no, Ein HaMikra Yotzei Midei Pshuta, the Pshut Rishon Mikra is also binding, but the drushes are certainly binding. So that, yes, the interpretation of the Gemara is an additional level of interpretation. Ech Yavda Agrei Mahem Salaheihem V'Ese King Amani refers also to Avodah Zarah Kedarka. But the Pshut Rishon Mikra, the Ramban HaChumash writes, is we'll research other religions and to see what beautiful fancy ceremonies that they have, and we'll introduce them into the Jewish religion to worship HaKadosh Baruch Hu the way the Umas Olam worship in church. We're going to move the bima to the front, and we're going to have the rabbi and the chazan put on big dekuna, special uniforms, and have three openings in the front, there's one opening and so on, to take down the mechitza, and the family prays together, stays together. We're going to change all the things in the shul to update all of Amin Hagim. We should follow what the Avodah Zarah are doing. So the Ramban HaChumash learns that that's a separate Isser of Chukas Akum. You know, there's a different Chukas Akum. A person wears wild, crazy clothing and a crazy haircut and speaks in a wild way. If a person does Mili D'Alma, he wants to identify with a lower class in society, that's one kind of Chukas Akum. Then there's another Chukas Akum, you're not allowed to worship HaKadosh Baruch Hu by picking up practices from the Avodah Zarah and introducing them into our worship. So the Neologan, that's exactly what they do. So the Marshal, many may be familiar with the fact that years ago, Rabbi Soloveitchik once wrote a letter, and then he used to print it every year in a newspaper. Even if the only place in your community to hear Tkiyah Shofar on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, Tkiyah Shofar is Minatur, even if the only place is a shul where they have mixed seating, it's better to stay home and lose out on the Tkiyah Shofar rather than to go to shul. So he said it wasn't the Hirasha, he wasn't making a Chayram and Ubid. He said it's a simple cheshbon. If you go to the shul with the mixed seating and you hear the Tkiyah Shofar, you'll be Yotzer the mitzvah of Shofar, but you will also have violated the Isser of Ech Yavda Gaim Hem Salahem as a King Amani. You'll violate the Avera. If you stay home, you won't have the mitzvah, you won't have the Avera. So Sechel dictates it's better to stay home, no mitzvah, no Avera, rather than to go to shul and have the mitzvah and have the Avera. He said he didn't write that letter as a Hirah Shah to fight against reform. He says, Pashut. And he said, not only to daven in a shul where they have mixed seating, to listen to Tkiyah Shofar, just to walk into a shofar and walk out. You are participating in a religious service, and the service is done with a mixed seating, in the same way the Avodah Zarah do it. He didn't write in the letter that if you have separate seating without a mechitza. That's a different question. That he didn't write. He was writing in the letter that they used to print every year in the Yiddish newspaper. He wrote if there's mixed seating. Mixed seating is imitating the Goyim. The separate seating without a mechitza, I don't think that's imitating the Avodah Zarah. I think they had the policy, the family that prays together stays together. So the prohibition against participating in davening in a Nialog Shul or as a chesed to listen to Tkiyah Shofar is, you're in violation of this special law. And it's not just the Ramban and Chumash. You see, the Rambam also understood the pasuk like that. The Yosef Be'er points out the Rambam also understood, and Tosis is quoted in the Shulchan Aruch also seems to have understood that the two forms of violation of Chukas Akum, one is not to have a haircut like the Goyim, and not to dress like the Umas Olam, and not to speak with the lower level of language, the way the Nachrim speak. That's one form, Minik Shtus, what they call the Minik Shtus. And then the other one is Minhagim L'Shem Avodah Zarah, to introduce Minhagim L'Shem Avodah Zarah into the Jewish religion, as if to update our religion, to keep it current. So, to go into the Nilok Shul, and to do the mitzvahs there the way they're doing it, that will be a violation. Yeah. But yes, we're just going into daven mincha, whatever. Right now there is no Nialog minyan going on. There are no women there. So when they had the Muhammad was going on, so Rabbi Shas Tam Bechamim, many of the Rabbanim made it easy. You're not allowed to walk into such a shul, okay? That was one of the Taksisi HaMelchama. But by us, we're not in the middle of the Melchama. We have in America, we have a Melchama. We have a Melchama against groups, deviationist groups, who are leaving Orthodoxy. But it's like we're not in the middle of this Melchama, but the Mi'alot. There is a Mi'alot to daven in the shul. The pasuk says, Dir Shashem Behimotso. So Behimotso means that season of the year when he makes himself most available. Gemar says, Eila Asar Yom Shebein Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Behimotso is Aseres Yimei Tshuva. And Yerushalmi says, Behimotso refers to the location. You should daven in the Beis HaKnesses. Rabbi Baruch Hu makes himself more available in the Beis HaKnesses. So it's always, if you have a choice of either davening in shul or davening at home, it's always better to daven in shul, even if you're going to daven mechidus. Unless you're the rabbi and you woke up late, then you're going to come to shul and daven at 9 o'clock, so you're going to show the balabatim that the rabbi doesn't oversleeps in the morning, so then it's in the shul rather better that the rabbi should daven at home. But if it's not an issue of achil Lashem, so it's the Shulchan Aruch says it's better to daven in shul than to daven mechidus. So Rav Moshe Feinstein writes, if you have a shul where they're in violation of the dinim, they have mixed seating or something like that, or they use a microphone on Shabbos or whatever, whenever they're in violation of the halachos, it probably doesn't have a kedushas beis hakneses. So you're not gaining anything by davening in such a shul. Or Rav Moshe Feinstein writes, we usually assume that it's not proper to shtel a chuppah in a shul. So that's also one of the major milchamas that they were fighting against the reform. They introduced that just like by the Catholics, marriage is one of the seven sacraments, and you have to have the marriage take place in the church, so we have to have davka and the marriage take place in the shul. So if that's the motivation why the Jews are introducing the chuppah in the shul, then it's an Isur of Chukas Hakam. This is Eich Yav Lagai Mahem Salahem Esen Ken Galmani La Shamayim. I'll do the same thing in my religion. So that's not right to Shtel Achut in the Shul. So Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva where he says, if it's not an Orthodox Shul, so it's Bechlal not, it doesn't have a Kedushas Beis HaKnesses, so it's not, you're not violating the Kedushas Beis HaKnesses by having the chuppah in the shul. And it doesn't look like you're going out of your way dafke. It's the least expensive catering hall. It has a good Orthodox hashgacha, the catering hall. So everybody knows that's why you're going over there. So you won't gain anything. You gain by davening in a shul. You won't gain anything by davening in a shul that doesn't have Kedushas Beis HaKnesses. But you can't say that there's an iser to daven. They made a cherem in the middle of the Muhammad that was going on. They made a cherem that you're not allowed to walk into such a shul. You may decide that you like it there, you may decide to daven there permanently. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein writes, in America, many of the conservative temples used to have an Orthodox minyan in the basement. So the parents who were survivors after the war were davening downstairs, and the children who were already modernized, Americanized, but davening upstairs in the conservative temple. So Moshe Feinstein said, you're not allowed to daven, they made a hirosha, not allowed to daven downstairs in such a Orthodox minyan in the basement of the conservative shul, because it may go upstairs to hear the rabbi's sermon, and the rabbi 95% of the time is going to say, I'll be course, he's going to say, divik for you. Okay, that was a hirosha that Moshe said over there. So every so often we daven in a neolog shul, not because we didn't gain anything by davening that, but we didn't lose either. The same as the Beis Avodah Zarah. And we're not in the middle of the Muhammad here, so the Haramim that they introduced really don't apply now. The Nadi Yehuda has in one of his drushes, the Drushi Atzlach, a collection of drushes by the Nadi Yehuda, he has that especially in Aseres Meitshuva, one should be more careful to daven in shul because of the two levels of interpretation in the Pasuk, Dir Shashem Behimotso, at that season of the year when the Baruch Shalom makes himself more readily available. Gemara says, Eila Asaras, Asar Yom Shebein Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. And the Yerushalmi says, in the location, in the Beis HaKnesses, where he makes himself more available. So that Yehuda says, and Asaras Mei Tshuva, we should all be more careful, as medaktik as possible, to daven taka in shul, as opposed to davening at home.
You're on.
Yeah. The Gemara learns that from Psukim that intermarriage is prohibited in both directions, whether the Baal is the Nochri or the Isha is the Nochris. But in Shulchan Aruch, there are more paskins like the Ramban. That's the way we accept halacha, that there's a major difference. If a Yisura marries a Nochris, so all the children are Nochrim, so that's considered the Loshen Rishanim is Nasa Luchutin Lavet Azorah, because all the children are Nochrim. So that's considered Yohard Valyava.
And the minute used to hungry, Rabbi Shafka.
No. And the minute used to be that if a Yisro would marry a Nochris, the family would sit Shiva. Because Nasa and Luchut Lavet Azorah, the other direction of Yisraelis, Aries and Rachri, the children are Jewish, so that's an Aver, like eating Chaza. That's an Aver. But it's not considered the same as the other direction. The Minig in Europe was not that you would sit Shiva in such case. The Minig always used to be Faker. If the Yisrael marries an Rachris, then the Minig used to be you sit Shiva. But this way is an Issa like Shatnas, like Chometz, like Trefus.
That's it.